Today on Supernormalize, we have Laura Chandler. She's a multifaceted individual whose life journey seamlessly blends creativity and spirituality. A writer, teacher, podcast host, and award-winning songwriter, she's authored 2 books and released 7 albums, showcasing her diverse talents in publishing, music, video production, and alternative therapies. Her work has even graced films and television. Her rich background informs her co-authorship of Depth Hypnosis, A Path to Healing, Power and Transformation, exploring unique integrative psycho-spiritual healing, which is a modality developed by Dr. Issa Guicciardi. In this book, Chandler shares her insights into the core principles and techniques of Depth Hypnosis, illustrating how it blends ancient wisdom traditions with contemporary therapeutic practices to facilitate healing, self-discovery, and personal transformation. Her personal experiences and long-time study of contemplative practices add depth and authenticity to her understanding and explanation of this transformative approach. This is a weaving conversation, and I'm sure you'll enjoy. So, on with the show. Welcome to Supernormalized, Laura Chandler. Laura, diverse background. You've been an artist, creative, and now a writer as well, and published so many works of song and audio. So you've written a book with Dr. Issa, I'm going to get this right, Guicciardi.
Perfect.
Excellent. All right, I got that right. And it's called Depth Hypnosis. What prompted you to actually start writing this book?
Well, it's been a long process of writing this book. I met Issa in 2000, and over a couple of years, we were talking about she had created this healing modality called Depth Hypnosis, which was a combination of a variety of things she had been studying from. She's a doctorate in psychology, but she grew up studying, and in her undergraduate and postgraduate work, she's a cultural linguist and studied cultural anthropology, and she studied with many indigenous cultures and also is a longtime Buddhist practitioner and now teacher. So on top of that, all of that kind of came together in her therapeutic, when she opened her counseling model. And we also, Depth Hypnosis draws from aspects of energy medicine and working in an altered state, a naturally altered state, generally from like meditation or shamanic journeying or guided visualizations. But when we met, what had happened is she had opened her practice, and within a year it was full and she was working 6 days a week. And she said, I have got to figure out, I need to train people. I need to train people to do this because I can't see everyone who wants in the model. And so we started talking about writing the book, and it turned into actually starting a foundation, which we called the Foundation of the Sacred Stream, which began as a home for all of the classes that come out of the Depth Hypnosis model, and also a home for what the Sacred Stream is, which is this idea that all cultural, spiritual, healing arts, and artistic traditions are informed by the same stream, the same unified force, the same mystic stream. So they may grow up along the riverbank as different grasses and trees. They look different. They have different practices, but they're all being informed by something similar. And so we wanted to have a home for where we could invite people to come and talk about their practice, their spiritual practice, or their religion, or their culture, and share it. So it was a place where people can gain information and learn about different modalities, from healing to spirituality to art. So we have performances and thought leaders who come and give talks at our center. So that's how we started. And then it took us 20 years to write the book.
Why 20 though? I mean,
that's a good question. I think she had written a book, got it to a publisher, and then the editor from the publisher changed, and then they wanted her to rewrite the book. And she was just like, oh, I'm so sick of this. I'm going to publish this book she had originally written as articles. And then we got so busy. It's been such an interesting process, because Depth Hypnosis has evolved over time. So we're just kind of looking at it as like, this was the right time to release it. But we have published a lot of material about it, and we've written some other books that are drawn from it. Coming to Peace is one of them. And so I guess now's the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Depth hypnosis blends ancient wisdom traditions and contemporary psychological and therapeutic practices. Reading the book myself, I noticed that you have a lot of touching on Carl Jung's work in the form of his Red Book journeying sort of methods. And also there's a taste of shamanism in there in the way that you actually get people to go into their process, but also guide it themselves. That to me is revolutionary, because usually the therapist and the person that's requiring healing and attention, it's a separate sort of thing. But with this, it's like you blend it together, and that's important. Can you talk about that and how that came about?
Sure, absolutely. I would say the premise of depth hypnosis, and really the premise of what one of the premises of the work we do at the Sacred Stream, is that in order for a person to heal, they must be part of the healing process. So their engagement is key. And the more tools that we can provide people to accessing their own understanding of what is causing, say, their issue, and bringing healing to that issue, makes all the difference. You know, I get a lot of people who come in who've done a lot of psychotherapy, and psychotherapy is fantastic. I love it. And I think everyone should do it just to get a picture of themselves and understand, get help looking at what's going on for them. For some people, they reach a plateau and they're still trying to figure, you know, they understand their wounding, but they're still not getting quite the shift they want, the transformation they want. And this is where depth hypnosis can be a real helpful additive, you know, addition to the practice. So in terms of, you know, helping people to engage in the process, you can say, oh, they're their own shaman, for instance, but they're their own healer. And so we're helping them gain the tools. Now, we are helping guide them, because let's say they go into an altered state and we see where it goes, and it's led by their experience, and we don't know where we're going. But when we arrive, we have tools to address what's happening. So oftentimes there may be some issue with that, where there's some traumatic event happening and there's soul loss as part of that traumatic event. And so then the process of the soul retrieval occurs, but it is the person themselves encountering the part of themselves, the soul part in this case, that is stuck outside of time, cycling in the trauma. They're able to connect with it. And just that connection right there, themselves connecting with the part that's stuck cycling in the trauma, stuck outside of time, is healing. But then they bring that part back, and there's an integration process. So it's quite dynamic in its processes.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. From what I've read, it sounds fantastic in the way that it works. And it does actually help people to tune into their intuitive abilities. And as you say, there's a part of the process you call inner guidance. And that's exactly that, is finding that intuitive path and then tuning into it. And I liked one of the examples that you gave of a woman who was a creative, and how she had trouble actually getting in touch with her inner guides, because she didn't want to believe that it was a cartoon. And I thought, that's so cool, because that's what happened to me too. I actually did some journey work, and it turned out one of my higher guides was a puppet. And I was like, come on, this can't be real, right? And it turned out it was.
And how did you know? What was the turning point for you that let you know that it was?
Okay, the turning point was, I was actually doing a course in shamanism at the time, and our shamanic guides that were helping us learn this process said, yeah, that's who it is. You have to do more study on it and figure it out. And so I went away and did a lot of reading on that puppet and its history, and then what it actually means at a meta context. And I was like, oh my God, that's amazing, right? It's actually really amazing.
Yeah,
it was so on point. And I'm guessing that's what happened for her too, is that once she realized, it was like, oh, wow, this actually is the right guide.
It was a really difficult process for her to accept it. I think in the example in the book was, you know, she had, what it was bringing her to was where she had sort of closed off a part of herself, the very creative part of herself, because of the relationship with her father, who was a scientist. And so she was this kind of free spirit artistic person. And he was a scientist, and she perceived it as he didn't like that part of her, that there was something wrong with that part of her. And so she had internalized that in a particular way. And I just want to emphasize that, like someone else who has the exact same experience, you know, where the father doesn't get them and kind of rejecting their artistic side at 6 years old or whatever, they may not have the same response. You know, this was her response, but it became so internalized and manifest as a part of her that was turning against that part of her, you know, pretty much banished her artistic self. And so, you know, she came in to, because she was having artistic blocks. So it is very fascinating how, you know, how the psyche works. And if you believe in the spirit, the actual, you know, spirit guide aspect of it, we, in depth hypnosis, we don't require that. You know, there is no dogma to this at all. We deal with past life experiences because that will pop in there. You know, it will show up. It can't, may not show up for everyone, but it'll show up. And if someone, if it just doesn't fit into their paradigm, well, they don't, we don't have to work with it as a past life, let's say. It's just the way the psyche is communicating. But I do find that when people are engaging in sort of shamanic training or are open to this, the larger aspects of consciousness, things happen that are, that kind of, you go, I never would have made that. There's no way I would.
That's exactly right. It's wild, isn't it? It's wild what comes through.
Yeah.
Okay, so depth hypnosis addresses trauma resolution in a unique way. Can you explain the process of trauma healing within this model, perhaps referencing specific case studies and examples from the book to illustrate its effectiveness? I mean, we just did then, but can we go into some other ones?
Yeah, sure. And if there's anyone you want to talk about. But, you know, I would just say, trauma is a loaded term in some ways.
Yeah.
And it's also become a very popular term right now. And, you know, I'll just speak to it from my perspective on it, which is a bit of a Buddhist perspective, which I would say in Buddhism, you know, one of the Four Noble Truths, one of the premises is that suffering exists. We're humans, we're in bodies. No, we're going to stub our toe. We're going to get sick. People we love are going to die. Things are going to happen. We are going to have experiences that are unpleasant. Trauma, to me, is part of the process of being human. It's something that we will all experience, but there are degrees of it. And so if we can kind of boil it down, I'm really speaking in general terms. So just to kind of give a context for how we work with it in depth hypnosis helps people address trauma from very complex trauma to less complex traumas. But I think you can look at trauma as an overwhelm, something that causes overwhelm in your life, something that's too hard to handle. Your brain kind of shuts down in a particular way. And so and seeks to protect you. And when that happens, that's when parts of the self can become separated, or what we call in depth hypnosis or in certain shamanic practices, soul loss. Right. So I think that if, you know, and when we look at the cultures that we come from, and I like to think we're changing in this attitude, but a lot of times people don't want to admit that they're hurting, that they don't want to admit that they see being traumatized by something or overwhelmed by something as being weak. So for a long, long time, we've been trying to like override this idea that something's wrong. And yet when we can address that something's wrong and be with what that is, that feeling, what that scary feeling or that sad feeling, but whatever that overwhelming feeling is, which is usually the trauma aspect of the trauma that's trying to get your attention, then we have the opportunity, and in depth hypnosis, we work with the altered state through guided visualization, but also through the shamanic journey of going in somatically into that feeling of the trauma, and then we see where we end up. And then there are a whole lot of things that from there, but that's sort of a nutshell version of it.
Okay. Thinking to that, I've been thinking about trauma myself in the way that it possibly forms. And it's like if there was a way that life was being recorded, and instead of there being enough, I mean, you know, with recording sound, when you have sound up too loud, it peaks out and then you just lose a lot of definition. I think that's what's happening when it comes to trauma or in an event. When you get to that overwhelm point, you can't process the information. And so it literally gets pushed out of your experience and gets trapped in other places. And so the soul recovery part of that is extremely important, because if you don't do that, then there's literally parts of you that become, like you actually even illustrate in the book, become autonomous on themselves. They don't help.
That's right.
You know, and so that brings me to the idea of soul retrieval and parts integration. It's central to depth hypnosis. Can you unpack these terms and explain how they work within the framework of the modality and how they contribute to the overall healing and wholeness for somebody that experiences this process?
Sure. Well, in depth hypnosis and in many other traditions, you know, we believe that the person is essentially whole. And as you described, we can, these aspects of the self, of the psyche, can kind of, I don't know if it's break off, but become separated from or kind of walled off. We describe it as being stuck outside of time. Anyone who's, you know, if you've ever experienced someone who's been in shock, someone's been in a car accident, for instance, they may have that glassy-eyed look, that deer in the headlights look. They're not all there. They're not all there. They're processing. Now, in that instance, they may well reintegrate from that experience on their own. But for all of us, there are times where we don't. And so when we have that little trauma or big trauma, we get stuck there, and we are ourselves move on. And, you know, we continue to grow. But there's some part of our psyche cycling in the trauma. And so from like maybe a psychotherapeutic point of view, I refer to it as aspect of the psyche. But from, say, a shamanic point of view, it's an aspect of the spirit. It's an aspect of the soul. And both work. But if we think of ourselves as like spirit in bodies, and we must tend our spirits, and by tending our spirits, we're looking at the aspects of the self that are in trouble or are troubled or are in difficulty as we start to, you know, through meditation or through different sort of self-reflective means, become aware of these aspects of ourself. And we may not become aware of them clearly, like, oh, I have the soul part, it's stuck and it was from this time. It's more, I have this recurring pattern. Why does this keep happening? Or I have this, you know, I get triggered and I feel really unsafe and it doesn't, for no reason. Or maybe we think it's a reason and we blame our partner for doing something and it's not really them. And that's a whole other, those are the relationship issue, you know. But as I mentioned before, it's this, in doing the inner work, part of, I think, the inner work of just being on this human path is becoming aware of the parts of ourselves, the aspects of our experience that have caused us to separate from parts of ourself. And so you mentioned Carl Jung, and Carl Jung talks about the shadow. And so the shadow is that place where these aspects are remain, and it's in shadow because we're not aware of it. So when we bring awareness to it, again, through processes like soul retrieval, clearing energies that are not ours or that we've picked up from something, or, you know, becoming aware of what's going on in our internal world, then what we're doing is we're bringing light to the shadow. And so I always look at depth hypnosis as sort of like a spelunking adventure. You've got your helmet, your pit hat on, and light on your helmet, and you're illuminating what's there. And as you engage in the process of illuminating what's there, it's a very healing, it's a very transformative experience. And I always describe depth hypnosis as experiential. And it's not an intellectual process. You certainly process it. You process the process afterwards. You may talk about it as you're integrating it. But the experience itself is like an epiphany. And when you have that realization and it dials in, you know, when this young woman we talked about who realized that she had been resisting her inner guidance that kept showing up as a cartoon character because her father hated cartoons and thought they were childish, and that she had created this dynamic within herself that suppressed a part of herself. It just shifted everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's like an epiphany.
Yeah, yeah. The book mentions the use of altered states of consciousness, such as those achieved through meditation, visualizations, and other techniques. Can you describe the role of these altered states in depth hypnosis and how they facilitate access to deeper levels of awareness and healing?
Sure. Well, in depth hypnosis, you know, we do have a talk aspect to it, which is part of the processing and part of the identifying of the issue, what's going on with the person. And so there are those techniques, but the altered state is the big engine, and the aspects of the healing processes that occur within the altered state. So the altered state, when we use an altered state, let me back up and say the hypnosis part of depth hypnosis is sort of like the shingle that everyone recognizes. They know what hypnosis is. And that's really just us pointing to, we use an altered state. We do work with suggestion hypnosis, and I can save that for later. But the idea is more that when you open to, you know, a bigger level of consciousness, you're going in, we use something called the first trance, which is a modified shamanic journey, which is where we're helping the person have their own experience through a talk rather than altering with sound. Although people who are acclimated to altering consciousness with sound can do that. We like to give people options because different people have different ways, different things that work for them. So when we find the way that works for them for altering consciousness and that feels comfortable for them, what we're doing in going into the altered state is we're moving past the waking mind state, the conscious mind, the intellect, where all of our stories are stored, where we know who we are and what we do. And we're going into a larger space, a larger field of understanding. And this is sort of the unseen aspect of the world. And when we get past the mind into this larger consciousness, the possibility for more information that to come to us, it's just easier for us to access new information that our conscious minds had not been aware of. So that the altered state really is helping us to open to something larger that's there. It's not planting anything there. It's not making anything up. It's actually the experience of it for people is profound and just healing on its own. But for anyone who meditates or who's done altered state works, whether it's with plants or whether it's with shamanic journeying or breath work, understand that sort of large aspect of consciousness and the healing that comes from engaging with it.
Okay. So I was going to say that many readers might be unfamiliar with the concept of cycling life energy, because that's something that you describe in the book. Can you explain that concept and its relevance to healing and well-being within the depth hypnosis framework? And how can understanding that energy cycling flow help individuals improve their lives?
Well, the simple answer to that is that we all have life energy. And so, you know, if you've ever been around someone, you know, and then you felt really drained after being around them, you are in touch with your life energy, because there's something that's happening when you're around someone who's pulling on you too much. So that's just a simple example of it. So life energy, the idea is that we want to be in touch with our life energy, aware of how we're using it, not just kind of going out willy-nilly and become, you know, I use the term drained a lot, but knowing what supports us and knowing what takes away from us. There are ways of sort of grooming or maintaining your life energy. And in depth hypnosis, people will naturally learn from those methods, but certainly things like meditation and personal reflective practices are helpful in that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
So I think that people become more aware of how they're using their life energy, and where it gets really helpful in depth hypnosis is they find out the ways they didn't know how they were not using their life energy properly. And I think we talk about addiction as a really good example of how the life energy gets cycling in an unhealthy way and is draining to us.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, anytime somebody is feeling stuck in some way, that's a manifestation of an imbalance in life energy that's actually become conscious rather than being unconscious, like, you know, an addiction, for example. So what are some common misconceptions and misunderstandings about depth hypnosis that you encounter, and how would you address those concerns for potential readers and listeners? And I first want to say too, before we jump into that answer, that for me, the book is really, you've called it depth hypnosis, but that's the hook for people that don't know about sort of shamanic journeying, because I find the book more so is actually about personal shamanic journeying than anything, really.
Oh, interesting. Well, there's a lot of, you know, I would say the two biggest engines are Buddhism and shamanism in terms of how we are, you know, how we are working with things. I mean, energy medicine, you find in both, you know, so, but Buddhism is kind of our compass in a lot of ways. Like, we're looking for where there are these ideas of what causes suffering, attachment, aversion, and ignorance. So we're always looking for what didn't we know? What are we misunderstanding? Which, back to the example of the artist, her misunderstanding about her artistic nature because of her relationship to her dad early on. What are we avoiding and what are we attached to? And those are the places where we become out of balance. So back to your point of cycling life energy. The shamanic processes that we work with in depth hypnosis are processes that are drawn from different, they're sort of like considered core shamanic, what you find in most shamanic traditions. So we're not taking from a traditional, you know, cultural shamanic tradition and doing that. We're working with them in a very unique way. And I would say that power or retrieval, soul retrieval, removing energies, kind of managing energy are three of the big engines of depth hypnosis. Misconceptions, I'm not sure about. I think everyone probably comes in with their own idea and then has their own experience with it. And again, it really meets people where they are. So I think one person may feel, you know, who has some shamanic experience would say, this is really shamanic, you know, and for someone who has a strong Buddhist practice might say, wow, this is very Buddhist. But it is a combination of those things in addition to other things.
Yeah, I recognize that. One thing that I wanted to ask you about this book, it's sort of like you touch on it, but you don't really touch on it. It's like, where do you sit when it comes to the understanding of extra spiritual contact and influence, which causes issues for people? I mean, that can be a part of a trauma process. I found for myself is that once I'd been through a trauma process, I actually was attacked by spirits.
Yeah.
And they caused all sorts of drama for me. Where do you sit with that? And how do you work with something like that?
Well, depth hypnosis certainly holds that as, possible and certainly encounter it. From a depth hypnosis perspective, I think some people would not be comfortable with that idea. And so if they might encounter something, that's external to them, that is affecting them, that has become attached to them, they can define it however they want. In a lot of cases, like with you, it's apparent that there is some energy that they've become entangled with that is not their energy. And this is a very shamanic aspect, a part of any shamanic paradigm. And we back up and say the shamanic paradigm, which holds true in depth hypnosis too, is that we're spirits in bodies and there are spirits out of bodies. Wrapped up with those energies. So what we find is that the energy, I'll just give you an example. Sometimes those energies, as I've experienced them, are coming in sometimes to be helpful, and then they've just become unhelpful after a time. So you might have so you'll find that energy will be resonating with the energy of the person that it's become attached to. So if it's sadness, happens when you have an energy that's coming in attached to sadness, it will magnify the sadness. So if you can clear that energy in the depth hypnosis process, when we clear that energy, we'll find the person may find a lessening of that particular symptom, but they still have to deal with the underlying symptom that attracted it or that kind of got engaged there. So there's still work to do. So I always say wherever you find energetic interference, you're going to find soul retrieval, and anywhere you have soul retrieval, you're going to find energetic interference, but it's common to have both.
Yeah. Yeah. I was watching a video the other day of a man who used to be a behavioral specialist for the CIA. And he'd been through a process himself where he had a illness which was causing him epilepsy, but then he also found ways through that and discovered for himself the connection to everything. And for him, the bottom line he came to was that love is everything and self-love is even more important than love. And as a part of that is self-compassion. Mm-hmm. Now, what role does self-compassion play in the depth hypnosis process?
Well, it's a very important role. Compassion generally plays a very important role. And I'm reminded by my dear friend who is the Dalai Lama's principal interpreter, English interpreter at Dupten Jinpa. He was giving a talk on compassion recently. And he said, compassion must necessarily also have wisdom. You can't just have compassion. You must have compassion with wisdom. And so what we're talking about is holding compassion for all phenomena is important. So recognizing that someone engaging in really horrendous behavior, causing harm, anyone causing harm to other people has a wounding. Now, that's not okay that they're causing harm. You can have compassion for the idea that that person has a wounding, but you do not tolerate or accept the harm that's happening. So this is what we would call fierce compassion. And one of the interesting things about that we work to help people connect to their own inner compassion, to understand compassion from this level. And self-compassion is really interesting because a lot of people have self-loathing. And it's unique to our culture, to contemporary cultures. And I've had to explain to monks, I do a lot of work with Tibetan monks, and they really don't understand this idea of lack of compassion for the self. They're like, that's natural. That's just the way it is. And even when Jenpa, there's a story that's been told many times about when Jenpa had to explain what a lack of compassion for the self was to the Dalai Lama. It was like it took a minute, you know, to understand that because it just doesn't make any sense. And also to illustrate that, I'll say Jenpa has this something called the Compassion Institute. And he's done a bunch of studies at Stanford. He's led this institute. And he said, you know, when we started teaching people in contemporary cultures, you know, like the U.S. and Australia and Canada and Europe, that this process of practicing loving kindness, one of the methods, the way that you do this is through a meditation process. And so you start with loving kindness for yourself, because that's the easiest. And then you move to having loving kindness for someone you love. Then you move to the practice of having loving kindness for someone you don't know very well. Then you move to the practice of having loving kindness for someone you don't like, or for a stranger, and then for someone you don't like. And this is a compassion practice, is how you develop your compassion in this sort of traditional Tibetan way. He said, we could not get people to start with self-compassion. He said, we had to switch it and have compassion for like your child or your partner, and then go to the self. And I think this might be a bit of our kind of stern, you know, religious sacrifice culture that we've grown up with here.
Yeah, right. Okay, so for listeners who are intrigued by depth hypnosis but may be hesitant to try it, what would you say to encourage them to explore this modality further, and what are some of the practical steps they can take to begin their own journey?
Sure. Well, we have a lot of information out there about depth hypnosis. This is the first formal book, but we have lots of articles, lots of free videos, lots of places where you can learn more about it, hear about it. If you're interested in doing a session, we have practitioners all over the world, and you can probably schedule a consultation. But I would say just certainly reading the book might help. Getting on our website or the depth hypnosis website, depthhypnosis.org or sacredstream.org. Are great places to start learning more about the model.
Right. So looking back at the process of co-authoring Depth Hypnosis with Dr. Issa Gushyadi, what are some of the most significant lessons you've learned, both personally and professionally, from this experience? And what are you most proud of accomplishing with this book?
Well, I think with the book, I hope it helps people. And I think that's the main, my main reason for doing it. You know, I hope it helps people. It inspires people to look at their issues as healable, as something, you know, that we can improve our lives. And there are lots of ways to do it. I mean, depth hypnosis isn't the only one. I just find it's a pretty rapid path. I mean, it does have a lot of strong engines to it. You know, I mean, for myself, I cured a cyclical depression that I'd had since I was 12. And you know, I think my whole life I had always wanted to help people. I had the great fortune of studying with someone, having a mentor and a teacher in humanistic psychology. And I didn't realize how rare it was to find someone who specialized in humanistic psychology at a college level. And so I got a lot of great education from that. And he had studied directly with Abraham Maslow. And I still am in touch with him today. I feel like the book is a little bit of a nod to that time frame for me. But
nice.
I would say, you know, for me, and I feel that being human is an ongoing process. So it's great to have tools and practices and just, you know, I love the name of your podcast, because we are super normalizing, you know, these ideas that we can live more conscious lives. And when we have a more conscious life and we're aware of the things that are causing us to behave in certain ways, we become happier. You know, we become
exactly
better partners, you know?
That's exactly it. Yeah, it is right on point. So that's a good point to end on, I think. And I wanted to say, we need to actually help people to find you. So where would people look you up online and find the book?
Sure. Well, you can easily get the book on Amazon, and it's called, I'll have it here, it's called Depth Hypnosis, A Path to Healing, Power, and Transformation. And we also sell it on our website, and certain bookstores will carry it. Sacredstream.org, like Holy River, is our website. My website is laurachandler.org, and you can find out more there. And depthhypnosis.org is another website. And we may be coming to Australia to do some teaching next year. So I'll let you know.
Cool.
If we make it.
That'd be really good. Yeah, I might be able to come along to that. That'd be great.
That'd be awesome.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Laura, for coming on the show and for revealing some of the processes behind depth hypnosis and your understanding and experience of writing the book and your work with Dr. Issa Gucciardi.
Thank you so much, CJ. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. All right. I'm just going to say goodbye to listeners. That was a great episode. I really enjoyed talking with Laura. I actually had the honor of reading her book beforehand and found some really good insights in there that really made me think about things in a different way when it came to trauma and healing and then shamanic journeying as well. So if that's something that's up your alley, get the book. It's good. Yeah. All right. So thank you so much for listening to this episode. And, you know, if you were on YouTube, then, you know, please like and subscribe. It's free. And because I know most of the listeners actually, and most of the viewers just watch, they don't actually hit that like button. Please do it. That'd be nice. If you're on a podcast app, give me 5 stars and share it to a friend. That'd be really nice. So thank you so much for listening to this episode. And until next episode, it's bye for now.